It's a great welcome and an absolute pleasure to welcome into the studio this morning, Ray Sorrell. Good morning to you, Ray.
And same to you, Jeff, and a good morning to your listeners.
Good of you to make your time available on this chilly morning, mate. Ray's got these guys. He's got a big puffer jacket on, folks. He's as warm as...
It's rather cool out there.
Oh, mate. Look, it's so good of you to come in, and we welcome you to Saturday Sporting Breakfast, of course.
Where do you start
interviewing Ray Sorrell? I have an idea. We know, and we will talk about in the next how many minutes it's going to be, the various accolades that you have earned in your career. But I think one of the things that when we start talking about success in anything, we tend to overlook the formative years. We tend to overlook the very young years. Ray, would you like to just let us know who were the people early on in your career who pointed you and perhaps gave you the drive and inspiration to go on to the heights that you've reached?
There were quite a few people in North Fremantle, footballers, I should say, they're amateur footballers and so forth, but there was two gentlemen in particular, and their names were Lou Reed and Stan Whipp.
Right.
And they coached me and coached the other boys with me, of course.
Yeah.
And they coached us, they dedicated themselves to us young fellows. We trained every Tuesday, Thursday and played on a Saturday. And I remember in the North Fremantle days, the very strong winds in those days, and the nor'west winds they were, and on a couple of occasions the wind was so strong it picked up the ball and threw it into the river. And someone had to swim out there and get the ball and bring it back and start again. But these two gentlemen, they coached us through our junior grades.
Right.
And I learned a hell of a lot from both of them.
So they, for a young boy, how old were you when you first started playing football?
13 years of age.
So a 13-year-old boy, these two guys had an impression on a young teenage boy, and it was their message that carried it through with you into your later days, Ray.
Yes, it was. Actually, at the age of 13, there was two gentlemen from the Collingwood Football Club, and one was Lou Richards, and the other, he was a champion footballer for Collingwood, and there was Gordon Carline, the secretary.
Right.
They approached my family and they said they had the idea of taking me back to Melbourne.
Yep.
They would foster me into a young family.
Yep.
and promised I would get a good education. Anyway, after they left, my father just looked at me and said, "What do you think?" Well, I was petrified. I thought, no.
As you would be.
And I said, "How could I leave my mum and dad,
yeah,
and all my friends?" So, but that I suppose someone must have told something about me. They must have seen me as,
you know, who that person was.
No, I wouldn't have a clue. But I must have showed some promise, obviously, as a kid.
Wow, because in those days that was rare, wasn't it? I mean, we see that interstate poaching, if you like.
Yep.
But for a young boy to be identified by, you know, probably the biggest club at the time, Collingwood.
It was, yep.
And headhunted,
yep,
in that way.
Yes.
Did you take much convincing to say no to your dad? Were you ever sort of thinking...
I think I said no before he asked the question.
Yeah, really. Yeah. That's unusual, and you don't hear of that in those days.
There was a couple of other players. I think John Todd was in the same situation as a 13-year-old. He was approached by one of the VFL clubs.
Yeah, I have a nephew who years ago now played for one of the private schools. He was good enough. He got headhunted by the school to play for them. But then one Saturday morning at the Oval, and I won't say which one it was, all of a sudden there's a scout, that guy in the red jumper, he's a scout. Yeah, they'd come to watch him and some other boys that played for that school.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah. Ray, when you look back now and after all you've achieved, and we'll go through that very shortly, does it all seem like it happened just yesterday, or do you...
Well, when I look at my life, actually, I didn't realise that I'd get to this age so quick.
Yeah.
So, yeah, 88 years of age, and that you just when I look back on my career, it's very hard to, did I actually do this?
Yeah.
I question myself.
You know, it's a funny thing that you say that, and this is not a word of a lie. I was saying to my partner last night exactly the same thing, not about us, but about she and me, and how quickly, you know, I'm in my 70s.
Yep.
Undelicately, I'm sorry if you're listening, but so is she. You know, how quickly life goes through. And we were recounting to each other the things that had happened, families and successes and tragedies and all the things that life is.
Yes.
And your point is, it's funny that you said that. That's not rehearsed, folks. not at all. You wrote a book.
Yep.
That we're going to talk about in a little bit more detail later on. But before we get down to getting into the detail of the book, tell me what the catalyst was for you to write a book. Not many footballers write books.
No, it all started, a few years ago now, a gentleman by the name of Norm Aisbert.
Yep.
He was a journalist with the Dubbo newspaper.
And a cartoonist, wasn't he?
Anyway, he was a number one journalist in the Dubbo papers and what have you. But anyway, he followed my football career.
Yeah.
And one day I got this call from him, and he said, "Can we have a coffee?" And he introduced myself, and he started asking questions about my football and so forth. And after about three or four occasions we met, he said to me, "Ray, you should write a book." And I said, "No, I'm not interested in that at all." And anyway, he kept at me and kept at me, and I said, "Well, look, I'll write a book, but as long as my wife's story is in the book, I'll go ahead with it." And that's where it all started from him.
Right.
And then he introduced me to John Townsend.
Yes.
And he became my ghostwriter.
Yes.
And then also the great man himself, Geoffrey Thomas. And, it was a very, very... it was a lovely journey, actually, from start to finish of the book.
Listeners would be aware that, sadly, Geoffrey Thomas passed away a couple of weeks ago now. And let's just discuss his involvement in the book, because he technically provided some assistance to you, Ray, but I know that he provided some moral support to you as well.
Yeah, Geoffrey... actually, it's rather a sad morning, because... Geoffrey was looking forward for being here with us, and Geoffrey was nature's gentleman, believe me.
Right.
But what he did for me, he looked at the story of my book, and then he started to, how could I put this? He wanted to get involved because he loved the story of the book.
Yeah.
And he organised black and white photos. He had a gentleman in Paris. He turned the black and white photos into colour.
Wow.
And the glaring example of that was that there's a photo of my wife, ex-wife, late wife, I should say, in the book. And the colour of her dress, the colour of her hair, the shade of her lipstick, and the colour of her eyes... absolutely perfect.
I got it, yeah.
Absolutely perfect. And it was various other things that he did for me, like he established a website for my book. There was quite a lot of things that he was doing for me. Oh, that's right, with the book itself, he made sure that the chapters were in the right order.
Sequence.
Sequence and so forth.
Yeah.
And that's right. He organised the printer, made sure that the paper was a quality paper, and it just kept going and going. And it was effortless for him to come up with all these ideas. And the book, I do believe that the book it presents itself extremely well,
We'll talk about that more before we finish, and we'll let people know where the book can be obtained. I think what I understand from what you've told me is that Geoffrey added a professionalism to the book that perhaps it didn't have before he became involved. Is that fair?
Yeah, it could be, yes. Yeah, it could be fair, yeah.
Because he had expertise. Listeners, if you don't know Geoffrey Thomas, he was the man that Channel 7 used as their aviation expert.
Yes, he was.
And he ran a podcast on MH370 for a long, long time. And I've got to tell you selfishly, Ray, I was looking forward to Geoffrey coming in because I had a couple of MH370 questions for him. But sadly, ill health has prevented that, and he lives well in the memory of everybody who knows him.
It was incredible. He was as large as life about 6 or 7 weeks ago, and it just all happened so suddenly. And now his funeral is next Wednesday.
Is it?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll be thinking of you, my friend.
Yeah, and thanks for that, Geoffrey.
No, it's,
he was nature's gentleman, believe me.
Life has a way of providing us with tragedy at a time when we don't actually want it.
Yeah.
So, Vale Geoffrey Thomas, and always well thought of. And
good
as
on
I say,
you, Geoff.
Before we finish, we'll let listeners know where to obtain the book.
Yep.
But Gary from Como has been on the phone this morning.
Yep.
For listeners who don't know, Ray's nickname, particularly in the football world, was Ugly.
Yep.
I'm not going anywhere with that. But Gary's asking how the nickname came about, Ray, if you could answer.
Yeah, well, I don't mind. It came about, we were training on this Tuesday night. The previous Saturday, we were beaten by Claremont and by a big margin. And Steve Marsh was the coach in those days. Anyway, we went on the ground and so forth, and he said, he said we're a lot of sissies, and he said, you're too soft, I'm going to toughen you up. So we had the man off, and my opponent was George Maver, and the training was rather brutal, I must admit, but we ended up clashing heads.
Right.
And we were a bit dazed, and we were sitting down on the ground looking at him, looking at one another.
Yeah.
We had blood on our faces and what have you.
Sure.
But going back to the early Tuesday, and that Tuesday I had a crew cut. I couldn't stand the hair flopping on my forehead.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was sitting looking at each other, and George looked at me and he said, "Oh, you ugly looking bastard." and then apparently about a week or two later, Jack Sheedy, I don't know where he got it from, but he was on the air, I don't know, for something, or for some reason. But anyway, he called me ugly on the air.
Yeah, right.
And then it just went like fire.
It stuck.
And it did stick. I got a mate of mine, I won't mention his name, but he doesn't call me ugly, he just calls me Ug.
Oh, no. Do you mind?
No, of course I don't. No.
We Australians have, I don't know if it's a good or a bad habit, Ray, of being absolutely attacking with our nicknames.
We've all got nicknames. Well, we did have many years ago nicknames. Everyone had them, and some of it was I won't say any more. No.
Well, I can share with you, and I can share with the listeners, and I'm probably hanging myself here, but I used to play a little bit of cricket, not very well, and I played with another Geoff Smith, and we were the two opening batsmen.
Go on.
And we were both... No, this is a true story. We were both dark-headed in those days. We're not now. We're both about 5'8", and from the boundary line from the scorer's bench, we looked very similar. So they said, we've got to get something sorted out with you two because we don't know for the opposition scorer which Geoff Smith scored the run or got out or whatever it was. So he wasn't a bad-looking rooster, the other Geoff Smith, and they called him Cuddly. His nickname became Cuddly.
I'll stick to Ugly if you don't mind.
Guess what mine was?
Go on.
Ugly.
Ugly.
So it was Cuddly and Ugly are opening the batting.
Join the club.
That's it, mate. That's it. Now, thank God, I hope none of those blokes that know me from years ago when I could run and bend over and breathe and stuff... the occasional cricket ball would remember that, but I think I might have just hung myself as well. Ray, I want to go back. I want to talk to you about your induction into the WA Hall of Fame. Yep. And now your induction as a legend.
Yep.
As Bill Walker was last week.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he was now a legend with the AFL.
Yep. With the AFL, that's yeah, right. That's I beg your pardon. That's right. Does that sort of accolade to you mean a lot?
I was quietly surprised, and yeah, it added to my achievements that I had in football.
Because your achievements are many, and that's why I'm asking the question.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not very good, I think, Australian people, at acknowledging people who do well. I don't think we do it very well. And we've got lots of people in sport that we don't acknowledge. I mean, your achievements, Bill Walker's, and a thousand others, are massive. And it's a body of work that's taken a lifetime.
I'd love a repeat. It'd be beautiful.
And to
repeat.
Know what you know now, wouldn't
I'll
you?
I'll be better. I'd do it better for sure.
So when we think back, we mentioned about the starting days at North Fremantle.
Yep.
Then I imagine that you have pounded the sand at Leighton Beach many times.
Yep.
You, one of your great strengths, I think, as a footballer was your ability to play on in the fourth quarter at a similar pace to what you played in the first quarter. Your fitness was terrific.
Yeah, and as a young fellow, I think it was George Mears, and he said to me, the harder you train, the easier the game.
Yeah.
But when there was such a thing as we called a second wind.
Yep.
And when you get that second, you can run all day.
No, I know.
Well, that's how it affected me, and I could run, and I did run all day. And they call it the second wind. Yeah.
Now, there's a story regarding the great Bob Johnson. Yeah, there you go. That's made him smile, folks. That's brought back some memories.
Good fella.
I understand that he said to you one day, "You put it anywhere near me, mate, and I'll mark it."
He did. Yeah.
And he did. All the time.
Yes. I remember in the, I think it was 1961 or 62, we were in the grand final. Mm. And he said to me, he said, "Ray, when you get the ball, just kick it long and I'll do the rest."
Yeah.
And there. But that was Bob. He was a good coach, there's no doubt about him. And a funny man.
Was he a funny man?
Yes. I went to see him in Melbourne many years after we'd retired and what have you. And I saw him about 6 months before he passed away. And anyway, it's a sad story with him. Yep.
Yeah. But he provided, on a positive note, highlights for East Fremantle supporters that they really hadn't had out of a full forward up until his days. Is that a fair comment?
In a way, there was another fellow, Len Anderson.
Yeah,
he was a terrific. Yes, he was a terrific forward. But Bob was unique. He really was unique and very tall and so forth, and kicked quite a few goals. But
he did.
He did. And he's a good. He was a terrific footballer, no doubt about him. When he played for Melbourne, he was one of the tops.
We were lucky to have him here. He brought to East Fremantle that I don't think that we'd had before. As much as we'd had, you know, Marsh was a terrific player.
Oh, yeah. And an incredible coach. Really was.
You've got a lot of respect for him, haven't you?
I have. I really have. I got to the stage there that I was training on the beach. Can I go tell you this story?
No.
Anyway, but I'm training on the beach, and it was a very hot summer, and I couldn't stand going to the oval, putting on this woolen, it was woolen jumpers in those days, and it was hot, and I couldn't stand wearing that and training for football. So I spent a lot of time on the beach and getting fit and what have you. Anyway, eventually I went to, we're getting close to the first game of the season, and this particular Thursday night after training, he was looking at me, and I was looking at him. So I went up, and because I hadn't trained previously, I was always on the beach, I went up to him and said, "I'm probably not playing in this." It was the first game of the season against Swan District. And I said, I suppose I'm not playing this weekend, on Saturday, I should say. And he said, "No." I said, "Well, okay, I don't care. I don't mind playing in the seconds. You're not playing in the seconds either. You dropped me down to the thirds, you know, the Colts." I was still young enough to play at the Colts. Anyway, I ended up getting three votes in that game, and that year I was beaten by two votes In the league side, Jack Clark and Polly Farmer, they drew, and I was two votes behind him. And over the years, I used to say to Steve, "You cost me a Sandover medal." I won't say what he said to me, and not on air anyway.
Was he a hard coach?
No, he went. Well, put it this way. What I liked about Steve, there was no grey areas. Yeah. Whether he was right or wrong, there was no grey areas. Yes, he could be hard.
Because he had to be? It was the right
thing? It was the right thing to do. And if you did the wrong thing, you would get both barrels. Yep. Absolutely, yeah. Yep. Wouldn't miss you at all.
And all the players respected him, as you clearly do, Ray?
Certainly did. Yeah, definitely.
Like there was like you're saying, there's no middle ground with him, was there?
No,
not the only one I've heard say.
That was a fact. No, there's no grey areas.
Yeah,
it was just black or white.
Okay. East Fremantle's team of the century, when that was first announced back in 1997.
Was that 97, was it? Oh, dear me.
Yeah, I know. As I was saying, the years go by.
Where did the years go?
Is that recognition still dear to you today?
Yes, it is. Yeah, it certainly is.
If it was me, it would be for me.
Yeah, definitely. My memorabilia, my son has got all my memorabilia, and he's got two boys, and I'd rather give it to them.
Yeah.
And they can carry it through to the many years ahead of them. So, I
if I was named in East Fremantle's team of the century, I think I'd be a bit chuffed. That's terrific. Let's talk for a minute about you going to South.
Yep.
And the ruckus that caused.
Oh, dear me. That certainly was. Actually, I was approached by Ron Warren of Warren's Menswear in Fremantle, and he was one of the committee men and so forth, and he approached me and said, "Would you like to coach South Fremantle?" And I said, "Oh, let me think about it." Anyway, because I was getting on in life, and I thought, well, it's another challenge for me.
Yeah.
And I thought, yeah, why not? And it caused a ruckus, there's no doubt about it. And the East Fremantle wouldn't clear me unless the South Fremantle played £1,250 for me and all this business. But anyway, when I eventually left the club, quite a few of the supporters and so forth from East Fremantle got very upset with me.
Didn't like it.
And then there was quite a few in South Fremantle didn't want me there either. So it was a bit hard, actually. It got a bit personal as well.
It did. And unfortunately, from your point of view, you didn't enjoy on-field success for the 2 years that you were there as well.
The trouble with me at the time, Jeff, was I had a hamstring problem.
Right.
And I only played about 10 games for 2 years. No, 20 games in 2 years. But I was always injured, and the problem with my leg forced me out of the game altogether. I gave it away when I was 29 years of age.
Yeah.
I just turned 29, and I just couldn't get rid of it at all.
Mm.
Yeah.
And then came back to East Fremantle.
Yeah, played a couple of games. My leg played up, so I had to give it away. Yeah.
Did the heat that was generated by East Fremantle supporters diminish when you came back?
It had done.
Welcome back, or was
not
there...
really? No, not really. I can remember this particular night. I went into the club to have a beer with the number one. What do you call him?
Ticket holder?
No. Ozzie Prowse, his name was, and he was the massage. He looked after
the trainer.
Jeez, I'm getting too old, Jeffrey. Anyway, we walked into the bar, and on top above the bar, there was all the photos of the Lynn Medal.
Yep.
The people that won the Lynn Medal, and there was a gap. In all these frames, and it was my photo wasn't there.
Yeah.
Anyway, this particular night, Ozzie Prowse, he got a bit annoyed and what have you. He said, "Where's Sorrell's photo? And it should be up there." And anyway, some of the fellas went. It got into a very nasty situation, yeah. and Anyway, we walked out. I did. I said to Ozzy, look, come on, but there'll end up being a fight here. So we, but that was the one that really hurt me when I went back to Ishmael. A bit ordinary. But that's how it was in those days, though, Jeff. It was incredible.
You can look at it now with a kinder view, but at the time there was a real them and us, wasn't there?
It was, definitely.
I grew up in Palmyra, and next door to me was a family, and their surname was Grilicic.
Oh, gee whiz.
All of them. This lovely lady used to take me to Fremantle Oval and watch them. And you can imagine how much I was a young 8 or 9 year old boy had to sit with all these South Fremantle supporters. It only deepened my love of East Fremantle, let me put it to you that way. I have some wonderful memories of being an East Fremantle supporter as a young boy.
Yep.
I went to Palmyra Primary. Players coming to the school for an hour and kicking the footy on the oval with the kids. You're doing a promotional thing. I have some wonderful memories.
Terrific.
It really is.
Yeah, and terrific.
I think perhaps sports people now are perhaps a bit more conscious of the impact that they have on the general public.
Mm-hmm.
And, you, by what you're doing today, just prove that, the professionalism. Talking about things like that, let's get into detail about your book.
Yep.
Because I'm lucky enough, folks, to have read it. I'm a sports nufty. I can't help it. I've always been the same. And bios and autobiographies of all sorts of different people, not just sports people, have always been my literary interest. But then to be able to read a biography written by one of my heroes when I was growing up, to sit down and read this. Out of all the biographies and autobiographies, Ray, that I've read, yours, I am biased, it's up there with all of them, because you touched on it before with the mention of your wife, and there's a whole chapter, and it's interesting. I'm not going to spoil the surprise for anybody
who wants to get
the book.
Yeah.
But I absolutely encourage you. Mother's Day is coming up, boys, if you're listening, and you want to find an ideal gift to get you some points back on the board at home, and we all need them because we burn them pretty quickly, get a copy of Ray's book, because the love story that's in there, in between marks and handballs and other things that are involved in a book about a sporting champion, is well worth reading. And I know that women that I have lent my copy to are a bit reticent on giving it back to me, because they love the story, mate.
Jeffrey, I can't thank you enough, because the story is a wonderful story.
Of course it is.
It's got some terrible things in there, but it is a wonderful story. She was a lovely woman. She's just very, very special, to be honest with you, mate.
Tell me about steaks on a Saturday morning. You told me at one stage that she used to cook you a steak on a Saturday morning.
No, that was on Friday night.
Friday night?
Yeah, and a scrambled eggs at 11 o'clock.
On a Friday night?
On a Saturday morning.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, because I didn't want anything so heavy in my stomach.
No, of course not.
Yeah, but the steak, I had to have the steak Friday night.
Yeah.
She was beautiful. Yeah.
I say this genuinely. The story is a wonderful human interest story within a book that's a human interest story.
Yeah.
So I congratulate you on that. Ray, where can our listeners get a copy of the book?
Well, again, Jeffrey Thomas, he's organised the new website for me, and it's the website is Ray Sorrell, without any, not a gap between Sorrell and Ray, just like a one word, raysorrell.com, and there are comments in the website there, the comments, and also the directions of how to obtain a book.
Right.
And the book is $20, and in that $20 there is a it includes the postage.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Oh, that's it's cheap.
Yeah, But I do believe it. I've had many. I've sold over about 550 books.
Wow.
And quite a few people have contacted me and said it's a wonderful read.
Absolutely. So I'll say it again. It's not just about a footballer and footballers. It's about life. And you've alluded to it. There's ups and downs with all of us through our lives, and you've had your share of ups and you've had your share of downs.
Yeah.
Beautifully written.
Thank
There's
you,
some wonderful photos in there. Even as an East Fremantle supporter, I think I've seen them all. But there's some wonderful photos in there and memories.
Yeah.
Just about to conclude, but I'd like to get your opinion on your grandkids, Harrison and Jonathan, are both playing for East Fremantle.
Yes, they were picked up in the draft. Harrison went to Sydney Swans.
Yep.
He was there for 6 years. Jonathan was picked up by Collingwood, and then he went to St Kilda. And we didn't realise, but Jonathan, he was very homesick.
Right.
And anyway, he came home, and both the brothers are playing excellent football for the East Fremantle Football Club. And may I say this, I know they're my grandsons, but they're a lovely pair. They're lovely men, and I'm proud to say that they are my grandsons.
That was my question. That must make you so proud.
They are. They're just terrific fellows. Yep.
All right.
Yep.
Okay. Mate, it's... time's got away. It's,
I'm going for a coffee.
No, I've got a bit to go. It's 17 and a half minutes before 10 o'clock. I absolutely appreciate you putting yourself out to come in here and talk to us, talk to our listeners.
Yeah.
And I wish you all the very best. You're the youngest 88-year-old I know. It's good of you, Ray, and I know that our listeners, whether they be East Fremantle supporters or not, they'll be WA football supporters. All thank you very much for your time this morning. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you in the studio, mate.
Geoffrey, thank you for the invite. I've